G'day, welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. I'm Graham Curry, your host from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilos or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle, and I successfully maintained that weight loss now coming up 2 years. I wanted to bring this series of podcasts to you to give you an insight into what it's like to living an intermittent fasting lifestyle. I'm also the author of the book, The Fasting Highway, which is a story of my journey overcoming chronic addiction to fast food and sugar and taking that walk from morbid obesity to normality. So sit back here with us on the Fasting Highway in the next few weeks and listen to some inspiring guests and some experts in the intermittent fasting community. And thank you for joining us. Enjoy the show. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. So today I'm here with Stephen Noh. And Stephen is a lawyer by day and social entrepreneur by night. He's originally from Vancouver. He has an on-and-off relationship with fasting since 2017 when he was first introduced to Dr. Jason Fung and the obesity code. And since getting married in 2018, his weight has slowly increased month by month and accelerated further during COVID. When he stepped on the scale in July last year, he was at the highest weight he ever was, and he realized that he had to do something drastic to make a change. And here to tell us all about that change is Stephen. Oh, g'day, Stephen, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Graham, great to hear you as well, and thanks for having me on the podcast today.
Oh, my pleasure. So what we might do, Stephen, to start off with, we'll just get a bit of your backstory and any issues you had with your health and weight and that sort of thing, and what actually led you up to finding intermittent fasting?
Definitely. So I can't say that I've always been like the healthiest person since I was a kid. I've always been seen as a chubby kid, not too extreme, but always here and there. And I've had an on and off relationship with intermittent fasting about 3 years back. I found that since getting married, that my weight has been slowly going up and up and up and up and up. And it wasn't until last year during COVID when I had the realization that I need to do something about it because I was at my highest weight ever. So still relatively new to this fasting journey, but I thought I could offer some perspective for those who are just starting out.
Yeah, that's great, mate. And so what sort of some of the things that you've found with intermittent fasting so far, like any sort of benefits that have come to you early on?
Definitely. So I think I first dabbled in intermittent fasting back in 2017. And at that time, I was living abroad in Asia. And what I was doing, I was just doing breakfast and lunch and skipping dinner. That was fine to some extent, but then I found that in the evenings, I would start going for drinks, I would have a beer, I have another beer, and it definitely was not helping on that aspect. But I think when I took it more seriously last year, and that was when I came across Jim Stevens' book, Delay, Don't Deny, that's when I really started to hone in on intermittent fasting, and I realized that maybe I should just try one meal a day, and adjusting it to just having a meal at dinner as opposed to meals at breakfast and lunch. And that's been a big shift and change. I find that for myself, my energy level has gone up, actually. If anything, that was the biggest surprise. And I find that I'm looking forward to my meals even more. So the meals that were normally just bland and simple have now been incredibly tasty. So I actually look forward to fasting now.
Oh, that's great. So we heard in the intro there that you're a lawyer from San Francisco. Tell us a bit about that.
Definitely, yeah. So I work for a San Francisco company. I studied and trained up in Canada, but my company is based in San Francisco. I've been a lawyer for about 6 years now, and I think in law there is, we could talk about this later on, but there is a bit of like an alcohol and in some sense even a drug problem. I think from even starting in law school, I remember drinking is a big part of the culture, and if not every week, every other event involves alcohol. So while I enjoy my time in the law, I think there are some other things that affect the industry, and I succumbed to it too. I found myself drinking a lot, maybe not every night, but definitely every other night, going really hard on the weekends, and that was having impact on my body, on my mental health, actually, and even contributing to the weight gain that has been going up ever since.
Yeah, let's talk about your weight for a second. So just give us a bit of a picture about what sort of a normal weight is for you and what your highest sort of weight you got up to there was.
Definitely. So I'm around 5'9", 5'10", and my peak was last year when I got up to about 200 pounds. you know, now I'm hovering around 175, which is around my normal weight. So anywhere between 175 to 200, definitely not on the extreme ends on either end. But I think I definitely saw effects on my mind. I knew that if I kept going down the path, the pattern of drinking every night, going out every night, having 3-4 meals, sometimes 5 meals, I could see things really falling apart. So that's the overall picture.
Yeah, so you've taken stock before it started getting out of control, and you found Delay, Don't Deny and Jim Stevens and had a read of that and thought you'll give the one meal a day a go. So since you've been doing that, Stephen, have you been clean fasting the whole time when you are fasting?
Yeah, clean fasting is probably something more new in the last few months. I think the first part, I was just focusing on the one meal a day and just, okay, I'll just do it. I'll just have one meal a day on dinners. So that was my primary focus. And then clean fasting has only been recently because I started to reach a plateau. If anything, actually, during the holidays, I kind of gained a few more pounds, and that's where clean fasting came into play most recently.
Yeah, so have you noticed a difference since you made that switch from what we call the dirty fasting to the clean fasting?
I have, actually. I have noticed a significant difference. On one hand, I feel less sluggish. But I mean, it's still tricky to implement. I think what appealed to me about the one meal a day is that, okay, all I need to focus on is, okay, I could delay these chips, I could delay these snacks until that dinner time. But I found that when I was not clean fasting, I would just be binging. I would just be like ravenous, like eating chips, eating things out of the freezer, ice cream, snacks here and there. So I think since shifting to clean fasting since end of December, I find that it's actually been a big difference. I've been less seeking those random cravings, and now it's much more intentional. So while I'm still relatively new on that journey, there has been that shift. And I know that if I continue this on, there'll be big changes for sure.
Yeah, so your window's become a bit more mindful and you're probably looking for that high quality foods now.
Certainly. And I think what it is really that sweet tooth. I think what I realized is that instead of after a meal, I would just get that sweet tooth or the craving to have something to satisfy my thirst. So instead of reaching for those chocolates or reaching for those chips, which actually make it even worse, what I've done instead was that I've actually just reached for an apple or an orange or having two apples. And my gosh, that one little shift has actually adjusted my trajectory. And it's a much cleaner way of eating. It seems like I'm enjoying it a lot more and feeling, you know, more importantly, just feeling a lot like less guilty about it at the end. Because as you probably know, Graham, like, you know, it's one thing to, hey, today I'm just going to fast. I'm just going to have this one meal. But, you know, your mind and your stomach says something differently. But now that I've shifted to this clean fast, whereas, you know, instead of having desserts and having all these snacks, having fruit. I mean, I know fruit itself has sugar as well, too. So, but I mean, this shift so far has been a big shift in my appetite and the way that I approach food overall.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what about things like exercise, Ned? Stephen, run us through that. What does that normally look like for you and what do you do now?
Exercise, yeah. I think, so I'm over in Vancouver and there are quite a number of restrictions on exercise itself. I'd say I'm like a moderate exercise person. I'm not a karate instructor or that aspect, but in the summer I started taking up tennis. And I think having tennis lessons and playing tennis with friends outdoors, that's actually been a lot of fun. So in terms of exercise, it's moderate. I think I go for walks. I go for runs when I'm with friends. So I'm really more of a social exerciser, and same with tennis. But you'll probably won't catch me at the gym by myself. Like there was a period in time many years back when I was going to the gym regularly, but I found that it actually increased my appetite. I find that I wasn't really committing to my health goals at the time. So I think for me, what's working so far is when I do that kind of social exercise. So whether it's going for walks with my wife, going for runs in the park with a friend, or just playing tennis outdoors. During the summertime when things were sunny and not as rainy and wet as it is now in Canada, I would be playing tennis actually up to like 3 to 5 times a week. And that's just been fantastic actually on the health side.
Oh, that's great. So tell us about your goals with intermittent fasting, mate. And also, With your sort of community that you're in, with the legal sort of fraternity, is it very popular amongst lawyers and that sort of thing? There's many people doing it?
I actually haven't heard about it. I actually don't think it is, to be honest, on the legal committee. I think, but let me address the first question on my goals for sure. You know, right now I'm about 175. So just give you a framework. Back in July, I was at like 197, almost at 200 pounds. So in this last 6 to 7 months, I've dropped down 20 pounds or so. I think my target goal is to get to 165, mainly because I think that's the last actually weight that I remember that I was at around high school. So to the extent that I could get to that number, oh my gosh, it'll be a thrill. In terms of a short-term goal, I'm trying to get to 173. So I'm 2 pounds away. That's mainly because that was the weight that I was at right before I got married. So goals around 165 to getting there. And just honestly, for me, it's really about consistency and just being really consistent with the fast. I have a paper actually right next to my closet where I mark down every day when I've done the fast. And I actually track down my weight and I do weekly averages. And for me, writing those numbers, it's more focused on that process. And to address your second question on the legal committee, yeah, I haven't really heard much. If anything, I think once this podcast goes out, I'm going to share it within my networks and get a sense of who is actually part of this fasting chain or not.
Yeah, so I guess that sort of community you're talking about, you mentioned the alcohol and the drinking and that sort of thing that happens sometimes. Do you miss that at all with intermittent fasting? Has that been hard? Because I know when I sort of first started, that was an aspect that I missed, that social sort of side of it.
It has been. You know, I think there's a blessing in disguise when it comes to COVID. And part of it is, you know, you no longer have that social pressure to go out for drinks after work because we're all working from home nowadays. So I think this period of time is kind of good to really, really consider my relationship with alcohol. I used to be quite a social drinker, and I don't say that lightly. I'd be going out for at least 2-3 drinks and, you know, sometimes taking shots of tequila, vodka at parties, and I'd be that annoying but friendly drink pusher. And so I think intermittent fasting on a side benefit actually has actually reduced my alcohol consumption, and I actually feel a lot healthier because of it.
Oh, that's fantastic. So tell us about your support networks with your friends and family and your immediate sort of colleagues. How have they accepted your lifestyle now that you are an intermittent faster?
I think some have. Some I haven't fully announced it just because I think there's still some pushback. Luckily, with your podcast and different groups, the conversation is shifting. But there is still that awkward eye when it says like, whoa, what are you doing? What is this intermittent fasting thing? I think one thing that there is some pushback is probably in my in-laws. So regularly on weekends, my wife and I would go to my in-laws for lunch and sometimes dinner as well too. And when I'm trying to explain what I'm doing, it just kind of boggles their mind as to why anyone would do such a thing. But I think for me, the key thing is surrounding myself with the right people. So there are friends on Facebook that I follow that I've met over the years who have really taken on intermittent fasting. So I really go to them when it comes to questions about how they're doing, how are they adjusting. Even when I started this intermittent fasting journey, it was actually from a friend itself. So in terms of support network, there is that small group. I do think when I first started, my wife was kind of confused what was going on. But I think she's on the train. I don't think she's doing intermittent fasting herself per se, but I think she's supporting my journeys and no longer making fun of it.
Oh, that's fantastic. So when you get to that stage where you get to sort of your ideal sort of weight that you're happy with, are you going to go forward with some sort of fasting or are you just going to sort of go back to doing what you were doing?
I think I'm going to have to. I think part of it is just really taking on that mindset that fasting is a lifestyle and not a diet. I think the tricky thing when it comes to any diets, as your podcast guests have said before in the past, is really about consistency and really avoiding that yo-yo dieting mentality. So I think once I get to that ideal weight gain, 165 number, it's really more of an internal celebration to myself. But at the end of the day, I think I do want to incorporate this as part of a lifestyle. I do want to keep this going. And saying this publicly, I guess I have to commit to myself now that I'm announcing this. But I think when I get to that gain, it's really about keeping that up day in, day out.
Yeah, there's no going back now because I'll be getting you back on the podcast in 6 to 12 months' time, Stephen. So that's your insurance policy.
please, if you're saying that, it's on. I'm more than happy to be held accountable for that, because I think it's great to have a bit of accountability on it. It's so easy. I mean, we're humans, right? It's so easy to fall back on past patterns. The only way to kind of shift out of patterns and habits is to create a new path. I had a friend who gave me this fantastic analogy about life and creating habits. And he gave this analogy about how our brains are like, imagine a field of grass. And as we continue to walk down one path through that field of grass, the grass starts getting trodden on. So you start creating a trail. But the first couple of times you walk on that path, you know, it's still going to be a little bushy. It's still going to be a little tough to walk on. But as we continue to tread down that path, it becomes easier and easier and easier. So I always keep that analogy in my mind when I'm creating a new habit. You know, really, I'm just creating a new path in my brain, a new path in this giant patch of grass. And the more I do it, the more consistently I do it, the easier it becomes. Of course, it's easier said than done, but I think part of that is just really absorbing that sense of a habit, that sense of a mindset, and just really being in the right place when it comes to intermittent fasting.
Yeah, I think you're correct. It is consistency and it is habit, that's for sure. And the longer you do go, Stephen, the easier it does become. And I know now, going into my fourth year, I don't even think about it most days, to be honest. I just, you know, I get up, I do what I do in the mornings and, you know, shower and put my clothes on and go to work and drive and commute. And I don't really think about that I'm fasting. I just know that after 5 o'clock is when I eat. And, you know, I sort of don't specifically eat at any, you know, sort of predetermined time. I just know that it's after 5 o'clock and then I eat one meal a day. And with your one meal a day, is it more like the restaurant style where you'll have like a snack and then a main and maybe a dessert, or is it just sort of one plate?
I just go one plate at all. So I think I just go dive right into the main course. So instead of opening it with the snack, I just go to the main course. So whether it might be something on the barbecue, maybe it might be a bone broth that I created the night before, whether it's something else. So I just go right into the main plate itself. And I find that it helps. I think that way I know that the window's open and now it's time to go. Graham, thanks for that feedback too. The fact that after a number of years, it gets easier and easier. That's very inspiring, and it's great to hear that from you.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's something that, you know, the longer you go, I mean, if you listen to the podcast, I think it was episode 8 or 9 with John Jerry Saunders, he's been doing intermittent fasting for some 8 years now.
Wow.
And he's an amazing guy. And he's been maintaining now for about 6 years. And so when you listen to people that have been doing it long term, it certainly does become easier. And the focus, you just go about your day. And that's what I love about fasting. It's not something that you have to think about too much. And that's why I love that book, Delay, Don't Deny, too. Did you find that a really simple read?
I love that book, Delay, Don't Deny. And I honestly, it was the book that really shifted. It was a simple read. I think the tone was very engaging. It just made things a lot easier. I think one thing that I mentioned, that I did dabble in fasting a couple of years back, but I think what was the issue before was that I just started to get in my head too much. It started getting too complicated. I started like using apps to kind of track timing, but keeping it simple, just like one meal a day, you're opening at dinner. So it might be at 5, maybe at 6, sometimes even 7, right? Sometimes after playing tennis, sometimes after run. It just kept it very simple. And I think whenever creating a new habit, for me at least, the more simple it is, the better. And that comes with anything, any kind of habits, any kind of new routines. The simplicity made a big factor. And I think to supplement on top of that is really joining Facebook groups, following podcasts, and just really surrounding myself with people who've done it and people that, you know, it's not too tough of a goal. And that's a big part of it for sure.
Yeah, it's staying plugged in. And I call it, you know, staying plugged into my tribe. And I belong to a few of Jin's groups, and I've got my own group, as you know. And I know people always say to me, why do you actually still participate in those Facebook groups? You know, you've got the weight off, you've done your job. And I say to them, well, you know, these people get what I'm doing and they understand. And there's days where I need that support too, even though I've been doing it for 2, 3, you know, coming up 4 years this year. But you really have to not just cut yourself off from it and just walk away, because that's when you can fall back into habits. And for me, it's almost like an accountability and an insurance policy, if you like we mentioned before, where I know that if I engage with people that are doing it and, you know, I help and mentor people that are doing it, then it keeps me focused as well.
No, absolutely. And I completely agree with that, because I think once we lose that sense of surrounding and having, you know, having the mainstream culture, it just really knocks us off our train. And it just sparked another thought too when you're talking there, Graham, because I think it's a part about creating that right bubble around us, creating those right, I guess, shields. I don't know if it was shields the right word here, but the right protections in place. Because, you know, ever since starting on this fasting journey, I started to really notice, you know, all these ads that are around us, whether it's a burger, whether it's a pizza, and even on top of that, alcohol as well too. I think it's so prevalent in our society, in our generation nowadays, that we are bombarded with food. There's so many bigger interests at play. And if we don't have these, I guess, protections around us, it's so easy to fall under that illusion, that spell that one should be eating, one should sample this cake, one should just, you know, try these like genetically modified foods to actually get us to keep eating more and more and more. So I think it's absolutely important to have that right support group, or even having those external groups to kind of surround ourselves and have the right mindset going in.
Yeah. Could you imagine watching a Super Bowl and seeing an ad for intermittent fasting?
Oh my God! Can you imagine?
What would happen?
That would be so funny. And I think there's something that Jen Stevens talks about in her book too, right? I mean, or it might have been Jason Fung, where the food industry is motivated to sell us food. I have a friend. She actually works in the food industry. She's the one who actually creates the formulas for soups, and the amount of engineering that goes into it, it just boggles my mind. I mean, on the plus side, she always gives me free samples. So back in the day, like, here, do you want this soup? You want this soup? But it becomes very much a science. It's so calculated to really pull on our internal like hormones, our taste buds. You know, we are pushing against the wave against this. So we need all the help and protection we can get. So maybe Super Bowl. I don't know if there's a way to have Super Bowl talking about intermittent fasting, because no one's going to buy those commercials, but one day.
Yeah, there's simply no money in it for the media and that sort of thing, mainly to, but I know here in Australia, we've got a couple of food companies that, you know, the companies that deliver foods, like they bring you food for the week, like, you know, they have all the names and the meals and all that sort of thing on it. And now they're sort of advertising their plans combined with what they call intermittent eating. But the intermittent eating still involves having three meals a day. And, you know, I just can't imagine going back to three meals a day and snacks. And you may have heard me talk about that I was a fast food and sugar addict and all that sort of thing. I just can't ever see me doing that again. And people always say to me, you know, what will you do in the future, you know? Are you going to go back to just having a normal sort of three meals a day, but, you know, rein in your sugar? And I say, no, well, what's the point of that? When I love fasting, I love the way it makes me feel. I wake up every day, I'm energized. I can go for a 6-7 kilometer walk fully fasted. I can go down and have a swim and do 20, 30 laps at a pool, and I feel great. And I don't want to go back to that sluggish feeling.
Absolutely. And I want to hone in on what you said earlier about the word normal, right? Like, what is that? Is this really normal? Like, having three meals a day and being sugar laden? Is this really the normal way of eating? I mean, I think we get the sense that normal is good, but sometimes normal is not good. We might just be under an illusion, if anything. I think that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I know. Like, you mentioned there the San Francisco, and I've been to San Francisco, and one of the great cities of the world. And I remember the amount of food places there was just amazing. It was like every sort. And for me back then, when I was an obese guy, it was like a kid in the lolly shop. You know, I'd come from Australia to San Francisco and Los Angeles and Las Vegas and places like that. And I'd never seen so much food available.
Oh, it's everywhere. Like, there's taco shops left and right. And so, yeah, every time I'm in San Francisco working there, food is everywhere. It just boggles my mind. Like I said earlier, it's incredible, actually.
Yeah, the great thing was I was last there in San Francisco in 2013, and the Australian dollar was on par with the greenback then. Mm-hmm. It was dollar for dollar, and unfortunately our dollar has taken a bit of a tip, so hopefully next time I'm back there, it's a bit more affordable. But, mate, what else are we going to look at with you? We're talking about stress and anxiety when we were talking prior to the podcast. Just tell us a bit about what you're working with there around the anxiety sort of side of it.
Definitely. Thanks, Graham, for the opportunity to share and talk. So my day profession is a lawyer, and I work as a tech lawyer. And maybe about 2 or 3 years ago, I was in a pretty stressful situation. I was in the pits. I was really questioning my life, my motives, why I'm in the industry, just mainly because of the stressors of the job and the profession itself. And I started looking online to see if there's any resources that talk about anxiety and mental health when it comes to lawyers. And I was quite shocked to realize that there wasn't really much. Like, only thing out there was resources on how do you identify depression in your colleagues? How do you have those conversations with others? But really nothing on yourself. And how do I really, fix myself as a writer, but how do I really improve myself? So that's kind of when I started this journey and created this group called Beyond the A. And the premise for Beyond the A is really to destigmatize anxiety and empower lawyers and law students to excel in their careers. And part of that's opening up the conversation about anxiety, opening up the conversation about depression. Because at the end of the day, like, happy lawyers are effective lawyers. I think there's a lot of factors in the legal profession with many others. I think part of that is, in some sense, society put lawyers at a higher pedestal where we're deemed that everything has to be perfect. We are in a naturally adversarial position. And what that does, it actually really causes a lot of lawyers to really keep their own internal struggles secret until it's too late. And when it's too late, at that point, I mean, people just drop out. There's stats to show that lawyers actually have one of the highest rates of drug use, highest rates of alcohol abuse, very, very high rates of suicide in all professions. And I think the earlier that we can do to address this by having conversations, by talking about this, the better.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so with anxiety and depression and that sort of thing, obviously a lot of people with weight issues can relate to that, Stephen. I know I suffered a lot from anxiety, and I guess I was depressed and that sort of thing too, but I never actually took antidepressants or anything like that. I probably should have at the time, maybe the way I was. But do you think that relates a lot to people's weight as well?
Oh, tremendously. Tremendously. I think part of depression, it deals with hormone imbalances, right? And when we are feeling sluggish, when we're not feeling as sharp as we were in the past, when we are gaining weight, when we see ourselves in a mirror and we compare ourselves to what we look like in the past, that is probably the fastest and easiest ways to really get down on ourselves. And it's, I mean, I'm just reflecting back on how I was, like, gosh, like 2-3 years ago, right? I was just so caught up in my head. I was looking at myself in the mirror. I'm like, Stephen, you don't look as fit as you did before when you started law school or even back in the past. So I think these things go hand in hand. And when you realize that you get control and get a handle over your own weight, when you start doing things like intermittent fasting, when you're having this kind of consistency, I think it'll help tremendously with when it comes to your mental health and your anxiety. I think I get the sense that in our world, we really separate out the physical fitness with the mental health, mental fitness, but they go hand in hand. And the more that we are physically fit, the more that we are mentally sharp and look good, it really lends to our mental minds as well too. So they do go hand in hand, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely correct. And I know I often talk about learning to love yourself first, Stephen, and I think that's an important step. And anybody that's suffering from anxiety or depression, you've got to flip that switch and you've got to start thinking positively about yourself and anybody that's trying to lose weight. I know in the groups we see it a lot, people beating themselves up. You know, I hate myself. I had a bad weekend. I fell off the wagon, all that sort of self-negative talk. And when you make that switch to start talking about yourself positively and loving yourself first, it's just so freeing.
I love that comment, Graham. And we do. I'm absolutely guilty of booting myself up. I think when I say, oh my gosh, what am I doing? You kind of get in your head and you get off that wagon. But it kind of really goes back to just having that right mindset. There was actually one line or a couple sentences in Jen Stevens' books where she talks about tracking your weight. And what I used to do is that when my weight would jump up for a particular day, I would just beat myself up so much about it. And then what I realized is that if I just calculate the weekly average, it's a lot easier, actually. So instead of looking at the day-to-day fluctuations, I just look at the weekly average. And honestly, that one shift in my mindset probably contributed to my continued success with intermittent fasting. Because for those who are starting out, like myself, I think part of it, when you're starting a new path, a new habit, is, hey, just really accepting that, hey, things can go wrong, right? And just don't need to beat yourself up over it, because it's so easy to see these examples. And don't get me wrong, it's great to have examples of those who lost 100 pounds, who kept it off for many, many years. But when you're starting out on this journey, it could be a little daunting, but my word and piece of advice is stick with it. It's part of a journey, and we've all been there before.
Yeah, correct. And everybody started somewhere. That's the point, whether you've lost 5 pounds or 200 pounds. And for me, intermittent fasting is so much more than just weight loss. I mean, the health benefits for me and the way I feel and the things that have, you know, helped me get rid of, like psoriasis I've talked about many times, and so many different things on my body that have healed over the sort of last 2 years. And yeah, I did lose 132 pounds or 60 kilos. And that obviously has probably brought a lot of those things on. But yeah, I definitely think you got to focus more about the health side of it rather than just the weight loss.
Absolutely. And I think there's one line that I really cherish. It's when you're in the midst of chaos and uncertainty, and when you're ahead, think about what you can control. So like, control the controllables. And for me, the controllables is, okay, having a defined window to eat. That's my controllable. And that'll be my first step to kind of think about. And when we start looking at the next steps, the next future, as opposed to always reflecting in the past, that could help tremendously. Because yeah, hey, it's one thing to compare yourself and compare myself to how I looked like when I was in high school or back in the day. But the more that I keep looking at that past, you start losing that steam, right? You start losing that sense of happiness. They say comparison is a thief. Comparison is a thief of happiness. And instead, I just focus on that next step. That, okay, what's this meal going to be? What's this day going to look like? What's tomorrow going to look like? And yeah, yesterday was my wife's birthday. We had a pretty big meal. Like, we wanted to celebrate. And so instead of getting myself down, oh my gosh, I probably shouldn't have that cheesecake. I'm just thinking about, okay, what am I going to have today? What am I going to have tomorrow? And just using that step-by-step journey to really guide my path forward.
Yeah, I know when you're talking about the meal with your wife, I read a follow-up book of Jin's called Feast Without Fear. And when I read that book, it really also helped me flip the switch, because in the initial stages of intermittent fasting, I wasn't going off what I was doing for anybody, right? I was laser focused. I was doing 23-in-1, 7 days a week. Any events or anything, didn't matter. I just walked right through it. I was going to do 23-in-1, and I stuck to it. And then there was my wife and I went out for a meal at a tapas place, and my wife said, oh, you know, I wouldn't mind getting dessert. And I sort of sat in my chair and I was frozen. And the word dessert just sent me into a tailspin almost. And I remember sitting there and tasting this dessert, just thinking all these thoughts, you know, oh my God, I've ruined everything, you know, and all of this. And then when I read Jin's Feast Without Fear, it really taught me that, you know, some things do come up in life, or they throw us a curveball or whatever. And not every day is the same, Stephen. So occasionally we might have a really, really special occasion. I know Jin talks about Saturday not being a special occasion, but unfortunately most special occasions are on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether it's a wedding or a birthday or that sort of thing. So, you know, you've got to sort of make this a lifestyle and be flexible with that stuff. And if you do sort of partake, and don't beat yourself up over it, just go back to what you were doing in your normal protocol the next day and it'll all work out.
How did you get yourself out of that tailspin at that time when your wife mentioned dessert?
Oh, yeah. Look, I actually got quite emotional as well. And my wife said to me, "What is wrong with you?" And I said, "Well, you know, I've done all this work and, you know, I've broken the sugar addiction and here I am tasting this dessert. You know, I feel like I'm, you know, betrayed myself." And my wife said, "Don't be so silly. You know, you've got to be able to make this a lifestyle and, you know, and treat it as such. You can't be like this." And so I thought about it and I've thought it through quite a bit. And that's where mindset comes in. And obviously mindset plays such a huge part of this, as you know. And to me, the mental side of intermittent fasting is almost 90% of the whole thing. But yeah, I worked through it. And then I did read Jin's Feast Without Fear, which to me is one of her most underrated books. And I really understood that concept of if you did do something or, you know, you overdid it on the weekend or whatever, just go right back to what you're doing. And I see a lot of people, Stephen, they do what's called extended fasting. And it's almost like they want to beat themselves up because, you know, they had a couple of extra tacos on the weekend or they went out and they had a few drinks and it comes to Monday and they weigh and their scales are up. And obviously they will be because the carbohydrates and the extra sort of fluid in their body. And they really freak out and they go into a tailspin and then they start thinking they have to do these long fasts. And that's just punishment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really inspiring, Graham. I think that's absolutely true, right? Because when you have a big meal, you're like, okay, I got to punish myself by having this extended 48-hour fast or 72-hour fast. And that has crossed my mind before in the past. But I think that shift from, you know, it's not meant to be a punishment and being able to fast without fear and being able to accept those mindset things that happen in your mind, it's absolutely key. And I guess it just goes to show that we're all on this journey together. We're all learning. We're continuing learning, right? But, you know, as the long-term horizon gets better and better, it's easier to work on it because we always have these little blips that come up and the ability to be flexible and move and to adjust but while maintaining that course of intermittent fasting, that's probably the bigger thing.
Yeah, and it's really important that we don't compare to other people. And I know we see that quite often. You mentioned there the word comparison is the thief of happiness and joy. And so true. And, you know, no two people are the same. And everybody's going to have a different journey. Everybody's going to have a different situation. And they're all going to come from a different base. And so we all have to cut our own path. So when you look at groups and you see people like myself, wow, that guy's lost 50 kilos or, you know, I'm going to try and do what he did. And that's great. And if it's worked for me, it has worked for other people that I've helped and that sort of thing. But you also have to work out, okay, am I going to go down the path of eating everything, all the things, or am I going to try and work out maybe this doesn't work for me like you have with alcohol? And so you've sort of, you know, decided that you wanted to do something about that.
That's very well said. And that is true, right? We do get in that habit of comparison and just looking at others who... Comparison is a tricky thing, right? Comparison can be used as a sense of motivation and inspiration. But on one hand, it could also be used as a deterrent and a demotivator. So I don't know where the balance is. I think humans are just tricky creatures, right? On one hand, I actually really like looking at the photos online and in the groups. It really inspires me to say, hey, wow, that looks amazing. If they can do it, I could do it. But I think maybe when I'm not in the right mind space, I'll be like, oh, look at them. Like they've improved so much. I haven't improved so much. So I think it's a tricky gray area for sure.
I think it's important when you do look at before and after photos of people that you sort of have that mindset. Well, you know, if they can do that, then yes, I can do it too, particularly if you're the similar sort of build and that sort of thing. But, you know, and like if a guy's 350 pounds and he's looking photos of me, I hope that he gets that motivation to think, well, you know, if Graham Curry can do this and I can do this too, then that's great and it works. But it's important also to realize that sometimes you have to read further into the story about what that person did. I mean, you know, how did they do it? What did they do? You know, 23-in-1 every day isn't for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't been to a fast food store, Stephen, in over 3 years. That's not for everybody. You know, some people love fast food and some people love, you know, sugar and all that sort of thing. And I don't demonize anybody. And for me, intermittent fasting is a lifestyle and you have to choose your own path and what you eat and that sort of thing. And then if you love sugar and you love fast food, and then that's your gig. But I think if we sort of try and work out what's not working for us, and then we can implement that in our windows, and we have that one clean fast a day, one worthy window, intermittent fasting, 9.9 out of 10 is going to work for you.
That's very well said, Graham. And I think you're, I absolutely agree, right? There is that nuance because there is something deeper to it. I remember reading somewhere where, you know, sometimes you're at this weight because you've been gaining this for the last 5 years. So to expect yourself to lose whatever you've been gaining in the last 5 years in 5 weeks or even 5 months is just unrealistic. And after I read that line, I'm like, you're right. You know, these, I am where I am because of decisions I've made in the last 5 years or last even more. So by setting these expectations on myself to lose all the weight in 5 months, it's just unrealistic for myself. Maybe for others it works, but for myself it isn't. And just really coming at that with a sense of intentionality, right? I think part of it is having a sense of intentionality when it comes to your actions, your life. And that's also kind of where like mindfulness and meditation really plays into the scope too, right? And actually, one additional benefit of intermittent fasting is that I find that my thinking has actually been a lot clearer than in the past. I find that I don't get as frazzled when it comes to stressful situations, solving through complex situations, and just having that extra sense of intentionality when it comes to my life. And that's been a big side benefit, actually, of intermittent fasting.
Do you find it's helped you with your work, Stephen?
Oh, tremendously. It has. It has helped me with my work. For example, I mean, in one sense, it's helped me with my work because now, like, I don't need to take a break, quote-unquote break. I mean, to the extent that lawyers have breaks. But, you know, I could continue working through the noon rush, the noon lunch hour, per se. And so it's helped in that for sure. And the second thing is that I find that I've been a lot sharper and when I approach my work. I think before when I would have a big lunch or a big breakfast, there is that afternoon slump, that 1 to 3 o'clock slump. So now I could still work through. I don't get that slump anymore and it feels great. And when I do get a slump, I just go for a walk and that's really all that needs. Yeah, so it has helped me with my work. It has helped me with my lifestyle. And there's just so many benefits to intermittent fasting. I guess the last big benefit is also saves on money too, actually, because instead of spending like $15, $20 on a fancy lunch at work, you just buy a coffee instead. So there's that benefit too.
Yeah, people always say to me, I must have saved a lot of money, but unfortunately I spent all the money I saved on new clothes.
That's true, actually, yes. It is actually.
Well, you know, when you're a guy that's lost 132 pounds and you can finally go into a high-end men's store and buy a nice suit or buy nice clothes, you're going to go crackers.
Absolutely. I think that's it's a positive benefit or also a way to waste money too, spend money too.
Yeah. So with your fasting, something I didn't ask you is the protocol that you're doing. Are you doing like a 16-8 or what are you actually doing there?
I'm actually very similar to your style, actually. It's more 23-1. So I just do maybe 1 hour, 23-1, or maybe 22-2. Because when I open my window, it's really just that main meal. And then it's the fruit afterwards as a dessert. So 22-2, 23-1. Sometimes it's even longer. It might be 25 hours. But it really depends on the activities that day.
What about things like appetite correction, Stephen? We talk about that. Have you found that that's sort of come for you where you get that signal when you have that one plate of food a day where you're done, you've had enough, you're satisfied?
I do, yeah. That does happen. I can't say it's fully honed in yet in terms of my own appetite correction. I think the one shift in the last month is really on that clean fast. So instead of having all these desserts, I would just have an apple or a fruit of some sort. And I find that after, you know, 2 apples, I'm pretty stuffed. I'm pretty stuffed for sure. And so appetite correction is definitely a factor that's adjusting. And I'm looking forward to the day that, you know, once I continue on past the 6 month mark, do it for another year, do it for many years in the future, just to see how that would work out.
Yeah. Have you been to your doctor at all? Have you had any blood work done since you started IF?
I went to see the doctor 2 weeks ago, I was going with my wife for a health checkup, and he actually looked at me and he's like, "Steven, you look really vibrant, actually." So in terms of actual blood work, I haven't done actually blood work yet. That's actually a good suggestion to kind of see where my comparables are at. But I find that even last week, I was playing tennis with a friend, and he doesn't intermittent fast. He's been eating 3 meals a day. And honestly, I find that after an hour, like, I was still ready to keep going and keep playing. So I find, at least I feel that I feel sharper. I feel much more fit than I did in the past. But I think that's a good suggestion to do some actual blood work to kind of see where my markers are at.
How do you handle, like, days where you're doing that sort of 23-in-1? Do you ever get to the point where you find yourself white-knuckling to your window, or you manage to just do it pretty easily?
I think in the beginning, it was more white-knuckling than anything. What I've done that's worked for me is that when I do get those hunger pangs, I just go make myself a cup of coffee, actually. And I just go for a walk and I drink coffee. I think before I used to just, like, wait it out, or I just, like, grab water. But I find that coffee helps actually to numb, not numb, but to like delay the window a little bit more. So when your mind is distracted, I find coffee works. What I've also done too is that I've scheduled walks or playing tennis with friends after work. So from 5 to 6 or 6 to 7. And that extends my window even further. So I'd be going for runs and I'd be going for exercise while fasted. And so to distract the mind, that's what I've done on my own day-to-day to kind of prolong that fasting period.
Yeah, you raised a good point there about distraction. And I was just talking to somebody about that actually. And they said to me, "What do you do when you're sitting there and you're looking at the clock and there's 40 minutes to go?" I said, "Well, you go and find something to do. Go and wash the car, go mow the lawn." if you're home, if you're not working, that is. And if you're at work, then throw yourself into your work. Maybe look for something extra to do, or if you work for somebody, ask them if there's something that needs to be done that's you can immerse yourself in, or clean up your desk, clean up your office, do whatever you have to do. And I talk to a lot of people, and they always say their house is so clean because they do so much house cleaning, because they get to that point where they think, "Oh man, I've got like an hour to go. What am I going to do?" So they get the vacuum cleaner out, or they get the duster out, or they listen to a podcast. But there's so much things that you can do. And with hunger, do you find there's two types of hunger? I mean, for me, I know there's that head hunger where I think, "Oh yeah, I'm hungry. I could, eat a horse and chase the jockey." And then there's that hunger where I sort of don't feel right. I feel off. And I just know that that's the time I've got to call it earlier and just eat. But if it's just a case of, it's that head hunger, mental sort of hunger, you have a big glass of water, and usually after a few minutes it passes. Do you find it?
I do, actually. And fortunately, it's been a little more head hunger for me. But there have been times when my body, I don't know, it kind of does a little shake or just shivers a little bit. And that's when I realized that, okay, I think this is probably time for me to really break the fast and end it early. So it's really about paying attention to your body. Quite often that head hunger comes about when I'm like, whether I'm looking at an ad on YouTube or I'm watching something and there's a food ad showing up, and that's really more of a mental trigger than anything. So just being really able to separate the difference between the two has been just key, because yeah, there is that head hunger for sure. What I try to do is I try to ride that first wave out. So I think when I first started on the intermittent fasting journey, that was more and more prevalent starting out. But nowadays, it doesn't really happen as much anymore. Now it's just like, I'm just going to delay and deny this a little bit. It goes away. So that's been my own mental mind check to kind of get past it.
Yeah, it does. And I think you also become so in tune with your body. You know when it's time to, you've got to maybe call it a bit earlier, or where you say to yourself, "Look, don't be so silly. You're not super hungry. You just think you are." And I think it's just recognizing that and paying attention to your body, as you said, and that's a really good way to look at it. So, Steven, before we go, I wanted you to try and, as a beginner, which we're going to follow up with you, as I said earlier on, in another 6 months, because I think that's super important. Mm-hmm. And I think with your mindset and the way that you look at this, you're going to be at a really good place in 6 months. What sort of advice can you give to somebody that maybe just starting out or thinking about intermittent fasting? What's some whys to do it?
Lovely. Thank you for that question. So advice to someone who's just starting out is, first, it's doable. It's absolutely doable. And I think it just really goes back to the points honed on earlier. It's really about consistency. You know, it's easy to get caught up with these massive weight changes in others and seeing these big drastic shifts in people's lifestyles, but really being on a consistent train and, hey, there will be things that happen. There will be blips, but having that sense of consistency day in, day out, and thinking really long-term, I think that'd be probably the best piece of advice that I'd give to myself 6 months ago, even for those who are just starting out. You know, I'm just relatively new to the fasting journey, but honestly, I see myself progressing further and further because it feels great. It feels amazing. And it's honestly one of the best shifts I've done since COVID started, actually.
Oh, that's fantastic advice. And I think just to add to that, I think people just need to keep it simple, Stephen. And, you know, when you start slow, maybe start with something like a 16:8 or something like that and work your way up. And don't be in any hurry. And I always say to people, it took me 55 years to get as obese as what I did. And then to make that walk from morbid obesity to normality, it took me 15 months. So you have to put it into perspective and, you know, don't think it's all going to happen at once, because intermittent fasting isn't a silver bullet. However, it's probably the best health plan I know, the side effect of weight loss. But Stephen, I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been, and I really, really look forward to talking to you again in 6 months' time. But Stephen, no, thank you for joining me here on the Fasting Highway.
Thank you so much, Graham. It's such a pleasure to chat with you, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen in 6 months or so.
Thanks, mate. Take care.
Cheers.
Oh, thanks, Stephen. Really enjoyed that chat with you, and I'm really looking forward to following you up. Next week on the podcast, we're going to be speaking with Erica Corrieri, and Erica is the founder of the Perth Delay Don't Deny Facebook group. And Erica's story is quite remarkable, and her weight loss is staggering. And Erica has such a great handle on this lifestyle, and she particularly is a great advocate for those over 50 that think it's too late to change. So don't miss that one next week, Erica Corrieri. And until then, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.